It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
Getting more texts on the Town Fair Tire text line about Arnie's comment that redheads aren't as attractive as, quote, the rest of us. I can't say her first name, but Isla Fisher, and I believe that is the redheaded woman from Wedding Crashers, the one who ended up marrying Vince Vaughn at the end of the movie. So if I'm not mistaken, that is Isla Fisher. She is actually married to Sacha Baron Cohen in real life, and Sacha Baron Cohen is the guy who played Borat. And for those of you who haven't met me personally, I actually take great pride in my Borat impression, and I do a very good Borat impression. So if you ever want to hear it, then I will do it, because yes, my Borat impression, great success. Yes. So if you want to hear it in person, then come to a Thursday night football event, and I will do my Borat impression for you. But I do believe that Isla Fisher is the wife of Sacha Baron Cohen, and she was the wife of Vince Vaughn in Wedding Crashers. So that's on that discussion. What's coming up today here in the Cat's Den? We go up until 6:30, and then we bring you UVM men's basketball. They are taking on Marquette. Sam Hyman is sitting courtside. In just about 1 minute from now, we will go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves Alistair Ingram. After Alistair, we'll talk about Alex Cora and kind of the hot water that he finds himself in very early in his Red Sox tenure. And this is something that I don't think the Red Sox knew about before they hired him. Alex Cora yelling at Astros personnel on a team bus, very similar in the way that David Price did. We'll talk about what that is, what that all means after we talk to Alistair Ingram, but let's do it right now. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves Alistair Ingram. And Alistair Ingram is the sports information director at the University of Vermont. He's locally on the radio, the voice of UVM men's hockey. He's also the voice of UVM men's basketball on ESPN3. He joins us now on Champlain Valley Game Night. Alistair, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brady. How are you?
Good. We're going up until 6:30 tonight because we've got a pretty big basketball game tonight between the Catamounts and Marquette. So let me ask you your thoughts on that first. What is this game? It's a regular season game, but what does a type of game like this mean to the program?
It's big, and I know the entire team, I don't want to say expects to win, but they go into these games now where they, the expectation is they can compete. They have that same sense when they played at Richmond, a Bucknell, a Yale, even at Kentucky, first game of the season. You know, they were disappointed losing that game. That's where this program's at. It's a big-time power team from the Big East, Marquette, with a lot of history. And obviously a large venue at the Bradley Center. They're 5-3 this year. They've already lost a couple of games at home. High-scoring team. So I think this team is at the stage now where, given what they did last year, given how well they played against Purdue in this building last year, it's a game where they expect to be competitive. And they wouldn't be surprised if they lose, and they'll be disappointed if surprised if they win, I should say, and they certainly will be disappointed if they lose.
Now you call the games for ESPN3 when they're inside Patrick Gym. So you're pretty plugged into this team. What do you think of the Cats so far at 6-2?
Yeah, they've been impressive. I think one of the bigger question marks coming into the season was defense. You lose a guy like Dre Wills, conference defensive player of the year. You lose a Kurt Steidel, who's an extremely underrated defender, was more often than not going up against the opposing team's best perimeter player or best swingman type. So, those are two key individual defensive players they lose. They're trying to integrate some new players like Steph Smith and Sam Dingba, who transferred and had to sit out last year. Skylar Nash getting into the mix as well. Everett Duncan, who also had to sit out last year due to redshirt. So that's been the interesting part of it is seeing how defensively they're able to adjust. And that'll be a big test tonight. Marquette's got two guys averaging 21 points or higher. They're both inside the top 40 nationally in scoring. So that's a big part of what I think fans should watch tonight is how the Cats are able to defend those two. Offensively, this team, I think, when they're clicking, are as good as any offensive team in the Northeast. They just have so many weapons with Henson, you can go inside and out. Lamb, who can do the same. Bell Haynes with his penetration. outside shooters. The Duncan brothers can both knock down shots. So I think offense coming into the season was kind of the constant. You knew this team would be able to score. But how do they make up for the losses of Wills and Saddle at the defensive end? And certainly tonight will be a major test of that.
Alistair, because you're in the athletic department, you're in the athletic offices, and because the sports information director is dealing with all the local media and national media, I'll ask you this question too. How has this program grown in the last few years from that standpoint? I mean, are you getting a lot more media requests, a lot more requests for interviews? Are people more interested in this program than they were maybe when you started here?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, we have our Tom Brennan court dedication coming up fairly soon, a week from yesterday, so next Monday. And, you know, he was the guy that put the program on the map, you know, back in the 2000s, you know, the upset of Syracuse. And really since that point, it's been carried on by Mike Lonergan and now John Becker. So this program has been at a high level for a long time now, probably 12, 13 years. You know, since the days of Sorrentine and Coppenrath. But last year obviously took it to a new level. You win 29 games, you win 21 in a row. You know, basically whatever they could do last year, they did do it, going 16-0 in conference play. So I think last year was a little bit more elevated where, you know, regionally, the team, John Becker, some of the players were getting more of a look. You know, especially going to the NCAA tournament, I know the Boston Globe featured the team, and the Washington Post did a piece on John Becker, as he used to coach down there at Catholic. So I think last year you saw it take a step forward, where this team now is not just an America East contender, but also is a team that wants to make a run. You know, they want to go to a Sweet 16, and they feel as though they can do that.
Alistair Ingram, voice of UVM men's hockey, but also UVM men's basketball on ESPN3 with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night as we're inside the Cat's Den. Alistair, you're a Syracuse guy, so when you hear comments about 05 in the NCAA tournament, are you happy for UVM? Or are you like, come on, man, don't take a shot at my alma mater?
Yeah, that was my freshman year at Syracuse. So my first exposure to SU basketball when, you know, as a student, you know, my first tournament, they had just won the Big East Championship. You know, they're playing in Worcester, and they lose to a tiny team from up north in UVM. So I was pretty bitter at that point. I was not a huge UVM fan. I've obviously changed my tone, and now I've been working here for 7-8 years. So, you know, when I see the highlight, I still cringe a little bit. You know, I almost expected to rim out from Sorrentine, but it doesn't. So that certainly was heartbreaking at the time. But obviously, being here now and being around the staff and this basketball program, now having a chance to watch them up close with all of our ESPN3 broadcasts, it's been great. You know, and who knows, if they were to face Syracuse again, maybe I would. Maybe I put my green and gold on.
Alistair, as I said, you're the voice locally on the radio for UVM men's hockey. Team is young, and they're playing like a young team right now. They're 4-10-2. They've got one more game here before the holiday break. They'll take on Brown on Saturday night. What are you seeing from the hockey team right now?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you know, I know everyone around the team, coaches and players are frustrated. It seems, you know, sort of like a different thing is holding them back every game. You look at the main series this past weekend, they get outplayed for a couple of periods. You know, in the third period, they roar back, they tie it at two, they get a couple of power play goals, and then they get a 2-on-1 in overtime and, you know, come inches away from winning it. And then Saturday, they lose 6-2, but I thought played a far better game. Now they're down 3-1 in the second. They get it back to within one. They're all over Maine. They put 20 shots on goal in the second period. And then right at the end of the period, Maine kind of flutters one through a screen. Stefano Slekas never sees it. And it's a 4-2 game, and they can't complete another two-goal comeback in the third. So, you know, it's a game of inches. And I think just right now, you know, it just seems like when it rains, it pours with this team. If they are trying to get a break, it doesn't come, you know, and it's just not resulting in the kind of results this team wants. But it's a two-half season. They get a chance to rebound Saturday against Brown. Then 3 weeks off before the Catamount Cup, where they face St. Lawrence and Harvard, two more ECAC teams. And, you know, it's obviously not a good spot to be when you're 1-6-2 in hockey. So that's a pretty big hole to dig out of. But, you know, there's plenty more hockey to go, still more than half of the hockey slate. And I know that there still is, even if it doesn't show right now, there's still a lot of confidence in this team and the coaching staff. And, you know, they're just trying to stay as positive as possible.
Alistair, for those who don't know, a sports information director basically is the catch-all of the athletic department. You're putting everything up on the website. You're dealing with local media like me, national media like ESPN. That's a hard job. I did that for a little while, and then I was like, this is too hard. I'm getting out of it. Now I'm like, radio, well, this is also hard, but it's a lot of fun. You're doing both of those jobs. How on earth do you have enough time in the day?
Yeah, it's definitely tough sometimes. You know, sometimes I'm obviously dealing with, you know, the media stuff or doing game notes or writing previews or organizing media availability. And I want to be, you know, prepping for a broadcast or getting a chart done for a basketball game. So it's definitely been tough at times. You know, the winter is definitely our busiest season when we have everything going on. I also call a lot of our soccer games and our lacrosse in the spring. So when we get crossover seasons, it's tough. You know, for me, it's the SID stuff kind of comes first. You know, that's my role here. That's my primary job. And then the broadcasting stuff, you know, comes second. But, you know, that's a major passion of mine is doing the broadcast and doing the play-by-play. That's why, you know, that's why I went to Syracuse. It's what I've always wanted to do. So those are just opportunities that are fun for me. You know, being able to be at the hockey game, do my job before and after the game, but then kind of when the puck drops, the headset goes on and I kind of get into my own little play-by-play world. Same thing with the basketball team. You know, I haven't had a chance to really watch them too much the last few years when they've been winning so many games, and now that we have ESPN3, I'm pretty much there courtside for every home game, which is a treat. I mean, it's, you know, Bernie Siplicki and I, we sit there courtside and watch, you know, one of the best teams Vermont's ever had, so... it really is a privilege just to be able to sit there and watch those games.
Alistair, we'll get you out of here on this. And something that we're going to be following in the next, you know, coming months. UVM has a lot of ties to the Winter Olympics. The Winter Olympics are just 2.5 months away over in Pyeongchang. And there's a lot of athletes with current UVM ties, you know, especially on the skiing side, and former UVM ties like Lowell Bailey, the biathlete. Pretty cool to see UVM have a presence on the international stage, huh?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know what the exact number is, but there's it's been a long stretch here where Vermont's been represented in, you know, consecutive Winter Olympics for a long time now, and obviously with the skiing tradition at UVM, Lawrence St. Germain on our ski team right now, she is more than likely going to qualify for the Canadian team. She just finished 14th at the World Championships, the FIS World Cup event last weekend at Killington. Or 2 weekends ago. So she's going to be competing, and obviously Lowell Bailey, I think, is probably more recognizable, having just won the biathlon world championship. First American, I believe, ever to do that last year. So he's I believe, a three-time Olympian at this point. But, you know, it's fun to see UVM athletes compete because, you know, the ski team, programs like that, don't always get the recognition they deserve. You know, just because it's not a major sport in terms of media coverage, but this is a great opportunity to sort of showcase those sports, not only the Alpine, but also the Nordic events where we've had some great athletes throughout the years. So it'll be a good opportunity for people in this area to sort of watch them compete and appreciate all that goes into those sports.
Alistair Ingram, one of the many, many faces of the UVM Athletic Department and one of the voices of UVM Athletics as well. He's the voice for the UVM men's hockey team. He also will call men's basketball on ESPN3. Alistair, we've got to let you go because we're getting ready to go to UVM basketball against Marquette. Sam Hyman will be on the call for that in just a couple of minutes. Alistair Ingram, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Appreciate it, Brady, and hope everyone enjoys the game tonight. Go Cats.
Should be a great game. Alistair Ingram, thank you for being with us. If you missed any of that interview, our production team is working diligently to put it up right now at 1013ESPN.com. So Alistair, one of the, again, you know, like you got to give a guy like that a lot of credit because the sports information world is a very, very tedious world. And it's not a bad world. It's a lot of fun, but it's very tedious. I did it at the Division III level as an intern for 2 years. And one of those years was at Norwich. One was at a small Catholic school, Misericordia University, in Dallas, Pennsylvania, of all places, which is nearish to Scranton. And, man, it's a grind. You know, you get in at 9 a.m. and you're entering statistics and you're writing press releases that go out to the local media. Anything you see in the Burlington Free Press that's a release about UVM athletics, a lot of that original info came from a press release that came from a guy, you know, that came from Alistair. So you've got all that. You've got press releases. And anytime you see a UVM player win an America East Award, well, that's based on recommendations from your sports information director. The team photos that get taken, they're coordinated by the sports information director. Then you've got to be at the games, and you keep stats, and you work with student workers, and you hire student workers. And in Alistair's case, he broadcasts the game, and then after the game, he writes the recap that goes online about the game. And then you send that out to the media. And then I want to call Alistair and say, hey, man, can we get Anthony Lamb on? Hey, can we get Stefanos Lekas on? Hey, can we get a women's basketball player on? Or can Chris Day come on, the women's basketball coach? Alistair sets that up. So he takes my request and goes to them and says, hey, what time can you do this? And Brady, he comes back to me and says, hey, I can do it. They can do it at this time. Can you do it at that time? And what's the phone number they're calling in and all that? It's a very, very tough world. And then you throw in broadcasting the games also. And really, I look at the preparation for our shows and say, look, we're live on the air for 3 hours a day, generally 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock. So for every hour that we're on the air, I look at it and say, okay, we need an hour's worth of preparation time. So we're talking about 3 hours of prep. What is Al? He doesn't have 3 hours to prep those games. He just comes on and naturally is good. He's finding a time to do all of it. I mean, that is a tough world, but it is a fun world. And we thank Alistair for being with us. We're just 7 minutes away from getting ready for UVM men's basketball. They're taking on Marquette. I do want to get to the Alex Cora story. And if you missed it, Red Sox manager Alex Cora, at the end of August, was on an Astros team bus and reportedly pretty aggressively had an expletive-filled rant with A.J. Hinch, the manager, and Jeff Blum, the broadcaster of the team, or a broadcaster for the team. I don't like it. It's not a good look. However, I'm ready. I'm okay with writing it off for a couple of different reasons. This is at the end of August, right after just Hurricane Harvey hits in Houston. And the team's going back to town, and they've been displaced, and they're on the road for almost 2 weeks, and everyone's antsy, and everyone's frustrated, and you know you're going back to a destruction zone. Hurricane Irma is barreling down on Puerto Rico, where he's from. And I believe his family was still in Puerto Rico. And don't quote me on that, but I believe his family was still in Puerto Rico. I understand why Alex Cora would have a right to be antsy, have a right to be irritable in that case. He also mentioned that he had been drinking, and it's not uncommon for players and coaches to drink on travel days and during travel time. So he's on the team bus. He's been drinking. You are irritable about what's happening around you in real life. I'm okay with writing that off. However, I need to know a couple of things. One, I need to know that Alex Cora doesn't have a drinking problem. And by all, I went and looked at it. All things that we've read, Alex Cora does not have a drinking problem. But I'm willing to write off alcohol if it's a one-time deal. But if it's habitual use of alcohol in which you become habitually belligerent, well, then we would have a larger scale issue with you as the manager and you as a human being. However, everything that I have found, Alex Cora has no problems with alcohol, so I'm willing to write it off and say that was abnormal behavior for him. And they're in unbelievably abnormal circumstances. And that I understand it more so than the incident that happened with David Price and Dennis Eckersley. Or I'm more so able to understand it than the incident on the sideline between Tom Brady and Josh McDaniels. I'm willing to give Alex Cora a pass because of all of those other circumstances, none of which were present for Price, who did this premeditated, had clearly been thinking about this, or Brady, who did this in the public eye. I don't believe in doing what Cora did on the team bus because you are in front of the other team. I don't believe in upstaging your manager, who's your boss. I don't believe in upstaging your boss in front of the team. Undermining the manager in front of the team is never a good thing to do. I do not believe in that. However, at least it was insulated to where just the team and some media members are. It wasn't out in public. This happened at the end of August, and we're just finding out about it yesterday. Yesterday after the show was the first time we heard about this. That's 3.5 months ago. So it was pretty insulated in a way that Tom Brady wasn't insulated on Sunday on the sideline with Josh McDaniels. It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. Rob Gronkowski's one-game suspension upheld by the NFL and current Arizona Cardinals wide receiver and future Hall of Famer, Larry Fitzgerald, says that he doesn't think Gronk should be suspended. He said that basically he doesn't want to see whole teams punished for the action of one player. Sorry, Larry, that's what it is. That's why it's a punishment. Okay, it's not just a punishment for Gronk. Yeah, if you hit Gronk in the wallet and you took away $500,000, as Arnie suggested yesterday, then yes, that's a big deal for Gronk and Gronk only, but it doesn't impact the team. Punishments are designed to impact everybody. All we hear in football is, man, it's a brotherhood. Man, it's a team. Hey, we play for each other. Hey, it's you know, the collective is more important than the individual. Not in this case, it wasn't. Gronk sent you a message that my personal vendetta at that moment was more important than the team. And so now, the team was hurt by that. And now the team deserves to be hurt by that for this week, and Gronk doesn't deserve to play. I'm sorry. I love Larry Fitzgerald, and I think he is just an absolute pillar of stability. He's a role model. He's a generally great guy. But I think he's misguided here. When you mess up, there's consequences not just for you. There's consequences for everybody around you. I remember being a college baseball player. One of my teammates went out drinking before one of our games. On a Saturday night before a Sunday game, he went out and got hammered. Well, you know what we were all doing the next day? We were all running. It wasn't just him. He hurt the team. That's what happens. A guy not running out of ground ball. We were all running. You hurt the whole team there. You didn't just hurt you. You hurt the entire team by your lazy effort. Gronk made a selfish play. He picked himself over the team, and now the team's going to pay the consequence. That's how it goes. I'm sorry to Larry Fitzgerald. I just patently disagree with you on that one. Gronk deserved to be punished by the league. It deserved to be upheld. It was a dirty play. It was a cheap shot. The team gets punished. And if you want to legislate out those plays, then maybe the Patriots lose to the Miami Dolphins. Do I think that's likely? Absolutely not. But maybe the Patriots lose to the Miami Dolphins, and then you see just how impactful one person's actions could be on a team that has Super Bowl aspirations and aspirations of getting the number one seed in the AFC. All right, that'll do it for us. We had employee Aaron here. We had intern Julia in for her last day. We also had intern Logan. We'll go out to Marquette. UVM men's basketball is next on 101.3 ESPN.